in brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust and blues you can trust. Indigos feel and white ones heal. Yellow scare and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 600.
That's right. The big one.
God.
How much bigger can they get? Like, at what point is it a big deal again? Is it if we hit 1,000? Is it if we hit like 20 years? Like, what's the next legitimate big one?
Probably episode 670, since that'll be our 500th.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
That's what, as you were saying that, I figured you were, this is where you were going with it. Yes, I would say episode 670 will probably be for the most significant for us. I mean, yeah, we'll talk about, we'll mention episode 650 just because it's a nice round number. But for us, actually, individually, or as in him and I, Chad and I, that 670 probably would be the most important next milestone, since that would be the 500th episode. And legacy numbering, of course, and not counting spinoffs and the extra episodes while your colon was being put back together and things like that. But yeah. I say 670 is the next one. So we got a while to go before that one.
That's true. So start dropping ideas about what we should do for that, folks. But in the meantime, what are we doing tonight?
Cover to cover. I almost forgot what the hell we call these things. It's been a while since we did any.
And what era have we chosen?
Oh, God, you're going to make me define this, because we could barely define it ourselves. This is going to be the Geoff Johns era. And by Geoff Johns era, we're only meaning the books that Geoff Johns himself was actively involved in. So while in theory, our GL June Green Lantern Corps Recharge could have fallen under the blanket, we're not concluding that, because it's better to keep Green Lantern Corps to be itself, because we'll probably pick covers from the Green Lantern Corps as part of the Geoff Johns time frame. But this, so further defining this, we're including all of Volume 4 by Geoff Johns, all the issues of Volume 5 that Geoff Johns was still writing the book until he vamoosed in May of 2013. We're including Green Lantern Rebirth. We're including Brightest Day. We're including Blackest Night.
Mm-hmm.
So we are each picking, because it's a big era and because it's our anniversary episode, that we're, instead of picking our normal five, our top five, we're each picking our top 10 covers from those, from that parameter or those parameters.
True. All right. Who's going first?
Yeah, I'll go first.
Okay.
All right. So my number 10 is from Volume 4. Is Green Lantern number 58, which is a Brightest Day with the Brightest Day label, which is Hope for Adara, which is up to this moment the only time we've ever had a human host, a non-Guardian host of the Hope entity, which really we've barely seen, which is ironic because we'll come back to that later on. But so this is the Hope entity and its host, which I forget what her name was. I didn't bother looking this up now because we're only talking covers. But that was an interesting story, and it would have been cool to revisit her as the host of Adara. But, of course, all these entities were destined to be first gobbled up by Krona, and then eventually they had to go replenish the emotional spectrum. Thanks, Robert Venditti. But I like the cover because it's not just it's the Hope entity, but I kind of like the fact that literally all the new Guardians are on their knees in reverence to Adara, which kind of it's kind of cool. Just symbolically, because of, I mean, yeah, Kara, Hal, and St. Walker doing it is one thing, but having, you know, Sinestro and Atrocitus kneel before anybody, that's kind of cool.
No, it's definitely cool. I enjoy it. And it's Doug Monkey artwork, very clearly. The only not to yuck your yum, my only problem with it, and that's why I don't think, let me double check my list. I have one Doug Monkey cover on my list.
Yeah, Monkey's not my favorite artist. It's just, it's luck of the draw sometimes, because we know he ended up doing a lot of the book in the latter stages.
Yeah, for sure. It's so he did Human Faces weird, but also when he draws people at a distance, it looks strange to me too. But I, this one, you know, it's not necessarily the new Guardians who catch your eye. Obviously it's Adara. And this was like a little girl, right? This wasn't,
yes. Yeah.
Which is strange, cause they almost draw her to be like a teenager or something on this cover. But I could have sworn in the story, she was much more of like a, maybe at the oldest, a preteen or something like that. Right.
Yeah. For some reason, Nicole Morrison was the host. I'm trying to see if it says how old she was, because I just kind of stumbled into this. Of course, it's not. But yeah, for some reason, I want to say she was like around 13. But I don't necessarily know, because again, I clicked on it, but it's Adara, but we need more about Nicole Morrison. But Nicole Morrison was the one who was the host of the human host of Adara. But yeah, it was kind of a wasted opportunity. But then again, a lot of the Brightest Day part was kind of ultimately was from a storytelling perspective, even though this did lead into War of the Green Lanterns, which could have been much better, but still was one of the better things in the post Blackest Night.
Cronin ended up ripping Adara out of her, right?
Probably, because that was the ongoing theme in all of these. We kept getting hosts for all these entities just for Cronin. Before we knew it was Cronin, just taking the entities and absconding with them.
Yeah, Adara was definitely an entity we didn't get a chance to learn much about. I mean, there's a lot of them we didn't get a chance to learn much about, but Adara was definitely one that would have been interesting.
Yeah, I just found the Nicole Morrison little bio. I don't know if it's telling, if it's, it still doesn't. I don't think it says how old she was. 14. When she was 14, she was abducted. Yes. So it's got to be 14, because she was abducted by that guy, which led to her being the host. So she was. So I was close. So she was 14. So.
I also like the variant for this issue, which is the one where Hal is ripping open his costume to reveal a Blue Lantern costume.
Yeah, I kind of looked at that too, but I didn't. This cover, I remember this cover. That cover, I really didn't. So that's why I didn't really circle around when I had to find one more cover for my list, since we had one common thread. But I still like this one. So.
Okay. All right. Well, my number 10 is Untold Tales of the Blackest Night. This is the regular cover, not the Ethan Van Sciver variant where it what was her name? Carousel.
Yeah.
This is the Tyler Kirkham regular cover, where it has Donna Troy and Animal Man and Lysa Drack and Ragman and Scarecrow. You know, Ragman being on a cover, yeah, had to throw him in there. But I also just really like this cover. There are two different covers that have the idea of people coming out of the Book of the Black or the Book of Oa, the Book of Fear or whatever. The other one being, I think it's towards the end of the War of the Green Lanterns it might have been Wrath of the First Lantern, when everybody was stuck in the book.
That would have been more Wrath
of the First Lantern. Yeah. Because there is a cover where everybody's coming out of the book there too. I like this one a little bit more. I like Tyler Kirkham tends.
You might be right. I'm thinking about this now. It might be Brightest Day. I think I'm thinking of when Hal and Sinestro were stuck. That was leading into Wrath of the First Lantern and that kind of storyline. I think you might be right that they've got all the other characters got trapped in the Book of the Black somewhere in Brightest Day, which is why it was just the Green Lanterns left, I think, fighting all the entities later on. I think. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. So, yeah, I just I really do actually like the Untold Tales of the Blackest Night issue itself, just for the content in it. I think there's a lot of stuff that was in there that I was like, man, why didn't we actually leave that in the series? That would have been really cool. And yes, selfishly, the Ragman thing, but I thought that was an interesting thing because like the rings were bringing back corpses of people and stuff like that. But the idea of Ragman is not that he has pieces of people in his suit. It's that the suit has trapped the souls. So the idea that the rings found, you know, latched onto the stored souls of individuals and ripped the rags off of Ragman, that was just a cool, like, wrinkle to the whole thing that I thought would have been interesting. There was also that this also had the Rainbow Raiders thing in there where they all had like a suicide pact and killed each other right before the black rings fell on, so they didn't end up getting resurrected because nobody cared about them.
Well, but yeah.
Regardless, this cover in particular, Tyler Kirkham tends to put a little too much detail. Sometimes that can be a criticism of something I would say for him, a little too much detail in some of his work. But there are times when it looks just really good and the detail is just right. Like, for instance, with Scarecrow's mask here, the wrinkles in his costume, the black sort of infections spreading across Donna, her hair. And, you know, when you are drawing a character like Ragman, somebody who is going to pay attention to detail, i.e. all the patches, is definitely helpful. By the way, the cover I was thinking of is the variant cover for issue 64, where they're Lysa Drak is chaining a bunch of people and dragging them into the book.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, this is my number 10. I really enjoy this particular piece of artwork. Yes, for primarily Ragman being featured somewhere in such a big event, but there are other reasons for it, but I had to include it.
Oh, I'm sure there's some other reasons, Chet. No, this is a good piece of art. And as you mentioned, this was a good series. These Untold Tales of Blackest Night were certainly better than a lot of the crossovers we had in the main books, the little minis that we had, that not all of those certainly were anything special, but these Untold Tales, it was fun. I mean, what they did with it, I think it was worthwhile, and this I could see why this would be on a top 10 cover. I mean, obviously it's interesting as we go through the list. You gravitated towards one storyline for a lot of covers and I gravitated towards another. So it is kind of interesting on that note too.
For sure. And before we move on to number 9s, just so people who are playing along at home recall what we do with this series. We do post preview images of the covers we're referring to, so you guys can follow along, because obviously we're talking about a visual medium on an audio podcast. So if you want to take a quick look at the images we're referring to, go to lanterncast.com and find the episode post for this episode, and you'll see some accompanying album artwork that showcases little preview images of these, so you can get an idea of what we're talking about.
Indeed.
All right, number 9.
Number 9 for me, continuing a theme, at least a mini theme to start off with, is the variant cover for Green Lantern number 48. This is a Blackest Night tie-in. During Blackest Night, obviously, during the main storyline, but this is a Green Lantern issue. So this is the St. Walker cover being extremely hopeful. All these little birds flying around him and landing on him too. And with the central power battery behind, with the hope written and pretty much other than all of the creative team and propaganda on the left side, it's pretty much the only real word that has any relation to the issue, or at least the title. So I like this because obviously St. Walker's other than Hal, arguably St. Walker is my most favorite character in the mythology, and he's certainly a character that's gotten shafted a lot. So This was a very, very, very nice cover. It does do justice to St. Walker, even though I'm trying to remember who drew this cover, because I don't know if it was really was Monkey who drew this.
You can see the signature of the art underneath the credits for the creative team, and that's not Doug Monkey's signature.
Well, I assumed it wasn't anyway, because the being blunt, Doug Monkey couldn't draw St. Walker well to save his life. There are many there are some characters he draws well. St. Walker ain't one of them. But yeah, so that's another reason why I like this cover, because it's St. Walker looking more along the lines of how we saw St. Walker when he first appeared in the Rage of the Red Lanterns in that whole storyline. So yeah, so that's why I like this one.
Yeah, this one is pretty great. It's always nice to get a good look at Odom. It's nice to see the blue central power battery. One thing I really like on this one is how pronounced the handles are for the central power battery. They stick out super far. They really give that wing effect that the symbol has, which is really cool. It's like it's peaceful, hopeful. You got the birds flying around. It's like he's doing yoga or some sort of Tai Chi. Or something to keep his center. So it's a really nice cover. Although, yeah, it does suffer from an overabundance of various declarations, you know, hope, and then the Spike TV Scream Award, and then the creative team, and then the barcode, and then the
they do kind of ruin what is otherwise a really nice piece of art, because with all of that on it. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It is a great one, though, for sure. My number 9 is a very, very specific one, and it is Green Lantern 12 from the New 52. This is my Doug Monkey pick. However, it is very specifically the variant for this that was published as a combo pack with a digital copy inside. Very briefly, for a while there during the New 52, you could buy like your regular issue, or you could buy the issue with a code for a digital copy. They were trying to do the whole dual thing there. So you could buy combo packs, and the thing here is the difference between the main cover and this cover is the coloring. They, in the main cover of this one, and by the way, this is the one where Black Hand is fighting against Sinestro, Green Lantern Sinestro, and Hal Jordan on the top of a building on Earth, like standing at the edge of one of those gargoyles, and he's got Hal by the neck, and he's, you know, he's just hit Sinestro and everything, and he's very triumphant and strong or whatever. But in the main cover, all the buildings are lit up. It looks like it's taking place at sunset, so on and so forth. But on the combo pack variant cover, the sky is black and all the lights in the buildings in the city are out. So it almost makes the scene more menacing, more befitting of a Black Hand cover. Stark contrast of how much differently I like the cover based on what coloring choices they made. I really had to pick this one because it really is a good action shot. This could be a great Blackest Night cover if Sinestro was a Yellow Lantern or something. But it's a really cool looking cover when the sky is dark and there's no lights in those buildings. It seems to take on a different tone altogether on the main cover.
No, I think it's a good choice. And again, with some of these covers, for me, it isn't just the artwork. Sometimes it's also the story that was inside and the importance of the story as well. But this whole thing with Hal and Sinestro dealing with Black Hand, of course, did lead to them being like trapped inside. Was it the Book of the Black itself they were trapped inside? I don't remember. Yeah. But it was something related to death, because that's how Hal was able to get out, because Hal had to die so he could get the Black Ring, so he could become.
Yeah, I've been meaning to get one of those book stands that like some people, you know, like use typically for Bibles or something, so I can set it up on my table and actually read my Geoff Johns Geoff Johns era omnibuses, because those are hard to read just sitting on your lap. So
yeah, it's true.
So I've been putting off my reread
because this storyline with Black Hand is what led to Black Hand being inherently upset by the fact that the Book of the Black just spelled out that that Hal Jordan was going to be the greatest Black Lantern.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Which of course
this is after the Indigo Tribe stuff with him, right?
Yeah, that's true, which is how we, you know, which is relates to how Black Hand kind of wasn't how he came back too, and all this stuff after Blackest Night and all this stuff.
Because he was
being rehabilitated. He was being rehabilitated somehow in the process of being rehabilitated by the Indigo Tribe. But the Geoff Johns run in Volume 5 was, you know, it's kind of like the certainly compared to what we have now. But it's kind of falls under that whole the pizza sex analogy thing, where even when it's bad, it's still pretty good. That the worst part of the Geoff Johns run, which I guess most people would actively say is at the very least post Blackest Night, it still was pretty good. It just wasn't as good as the stuff building up to it, because it didn't seem like Geoff Johns really had anywhere else. And I think it's true. He didn't really have anywhere else specifically big picture wise to go after Blackest Night. But when you think about some of the things we got, War of the Green Lanterns, and in the New 52, we did get this Black Hand storyline. And I still, even though, you know, the Third Army was garbage, but I did kind of like the Wrath of the First Lantern and things like that. So it was, this was kind of, and plus we know this was now with issue 12, we were kind of getting into the home stretch, literally.
Did you pull up the main cover of this and compare it to this combo pack variant?
I don't have it, but I can grab it unless you have it handy.
No, I don't. I apologize.
All right. It's fine.
It's a very drastically different look just by a change in the coloring.
Yeah, I could get it, but I don't think I can get it quick enough here.
It's all right. Go ahead. Okay. Let's move on to issue 8.
Issue 8.
Or this, cover 8.
Cover 8. Yeah, cover 8. I know what you mean. No, the slot number 8. So this is, I'm picking Green Lantern 12. So this is early on during the Geoff Johns run in volume 4. So this is the Cyborg Superman with all the Green Lantern rings on his right hand. I picked this not just because it's a cool cover and because it's Cyborg Superman. I picked it because of the storyline itself is pretty cool, because this is the storyline where we get the Lost Lanterns. This is the storyline where we get Cyborg Superman kind of starts becoming really ingrained 100% as at least as much of a Green Lantern villain as a Superman villain. That from he becomes really, really tied to the Green Lantern Corps and versus Hal. I mean, he should be Hal Jordan, who really has more of an issue with Cyborg Superman. But obviously Cyborg Superman kind of holds a grudge against when Hal seemingly killed him as Parallax too. but this just sets the stage for, obviously, all those Green Lantern rings also remind you of what's coming down the road, not in a relatively short period of time, when he becomes one of the the four horsemen there of the Sinestro Corps. So that's one of the reasons why I like this. And even though you can make a strong case, the Hal Cyborg Superman relationship itself really has never really, it hasn't really played out as well as it probably could have. You think they would be more more personal, the confrontation and the issue between the two of them. And if there ever was a moment, it kind of was this storyline, I think. So I think that's another reason why I like it. He's Cyborg Superman's always has popped up repeatedly as an obstacle, a thorn in more of the Green Lantern Corps side, generally speaking, and specifically Hal after this issue. But still, he's become a major Green Lantern villain, kind of like how Mongol became a major Green Lantern villain too, despite starting as a major Superman villain.
Yeah, it's definitely a great one. It's an homage to Daryl's work in a way, just obviously a different perspective, different character, thing like that. But the maniacal face and everything, lots of detail and everything. The only problem I have with the detail on this one is it feels like, and who's the artist on this one? Is it Ivan Reis? Because I don't feel like it is based on looking at the art.
And again, I just have the small.
Because Moose has his thing there, but that means he's the colorist, right? Because isn't Moose the guy who put out a bunch of prints a few years ago?
Moose was definitely the guy who did the prints.
Yeah, so but again, but he was the colorist for those, wasn't he?
I think so. I don't specifically remember if this was one of them, but on the ones he put out, yes, he was the colorist.
Yeah. The only problem I have with this is because of the detail, it's a little too ink heavy. because specifically around the face, like the detail, like you take a look at the detail on his hands with the rings and follow it down his arm and his chest and everything. That's really great, but it does get a little muddled around the face, and the ink lines are a little heavy, kind of making it blur a little bit together, as opposed to looking clean and crisp like his hand does, which is closer to the viewer. But it still is. It does its job. There's fire in the background. It's crazy. It's maniacal. This is in the lead up to in advance of the lead up to Sinestro Corps War, but definitely kind of putting him in the staging ground. So it's a lot of fun to look at for sure.
Yeah, and it's certainly fun to look back at it because again we know where this was going. Now we know where it went at the time clearly. We didn't necessarily know that, but it is an important issue based on what was to come.
For sure. All right. My number eight is Green Lantern number 18. There are a few different reasons I chose this. I do like lots of different covers that have various different lanterns on them. I wanted to pick something with Carol as a Star Sapphire, but also one thing I really like about the Geoff Johns run, there are lots of things to like about it, but I always did like that they have, and I forget if it was 18, 19, 20 or 17, 18, 19 or whatever, but there were the three issues with Carol on the cover facing down Hal. And that's an homage actually to the Pat Broderick era of Green Lantern in the run, you know, that started with Hal and then became Kyle later on, that we had those three issues of a Star Sapphire story early on in that run too. So it was very clearly homage. The fact that we had kind of a three issue arc featuring a Star Sapphire on three different covers. This is my favorite of those. You can argue till the cows come home is the fact that she's bent over or fully on display or whatever, but it is a very classic kind of cover because the whole like woman stepping on a guy thing or putting her heel on him and this whole pose, this whole dynamic, especially with the lack of much of a background, is a very like atypical comic thing that you would see not just in this modern era, but in a classic comic book era too. This is a very classic kind of comic pose, the villainous stepping on the hero. But then of course, you know, it's done by Ivan Reis, so it's all the better. They make fun of it a little bit with the funny Love Stinks logo in the corner there on the side. I think it's a pretty good showing of Ivan Reis's artwork, and it's a nice homage to previous Green Lantern publication and a nice homage to the types of covers you would see back in the day in comic history. And I think it's my favorite of those three of the Star Sapphire covers we got in that quick succession.
No, I can certainly understand that. I can see that. It's a pretty, I would say it's a pretty simple cover on some level, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It's pretty straightforward. It's, you know, it arguably has Chad's worst enemy with some borderline dead space, white space in the back, though it's purple.
Yeah.
But the reality is it is a very simple, quote unquote, classic kind of cover. So, and this also was, and again, from a sentimental perspective, this is just when, you know, this is really when things were starting to really heat up in Green Lantern. You know, we were getting really close to being completely entrenched into the buildup towards, and we kind of already were, honestly, the buildup, but we were about to get full force, full bore into Sinestro Corps War, and then everything else with the buildup towards Blackest Night. So, yeah, this was a good era, so I kind of have fond memories of. It was also a more simpler time in the Geoff Johns run before we kind of knew where all these things were going and the big payoffs. It just seemed like he was doing a good book that people enjoyed reading, but we didn't realize all the breadcrumbs he was laying that were about to pay dividends.
For sure. All right, number seven.
And I did look at your cover for Green Lantern 12. Yes, the variant you picked was much better than the original. the original.
Yeah, amazing cover. What the coloring does,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But way too bright in the than the regular cover. All right, so I picked my number 7 is Green Lantern number 63, which is the War of the Green Lanterns prologue. It is the Assault on Oa cover, which has Krona with his little hair transplanted on the top of his head, and all being surrounded by all the entities. So it's colorful. It's a rare moment where we have all the entities, even though it is more of the bug version of Parallax, not the kind of almost less of the dragon type, more of the bug type version of Parallax. But you have a good picture. Ion, they're all there. And I think, and it's just very colorful. And of course, it's paving the way for once again in that storyline, how the entities were going to be a major factor in that storyline. So I think it's cool. And I do like War of the Green Lanterns. I think it could have been somewhat better. They could have approached it somewhat better based on what we thought that was going to be. We thought it was going to be kind of like a civil war with the Green Lanterns, kind of what's his face? Our disgruntled writer who did volume 3 before Ron Mars took over.
He who shall not be named.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, what is you name him? So I don't. I'm not.
The guy who got indicted. I forgot his name too. I know who you're talking about though.
All right, but yeah. what the original plans for Emerald Twilight were going to be when we were going to have two warring factions of Green Lanterns led by two different factions of Guardians, supposedly, which wouldn't have played out that way, but that's that on the surface, that's what it was going to be. That Gerard Jones, there we go. Yeah. I just popped into my head, thank God, because I was going to shoot myself. That was a bad one to forget, because of his place in Green Lantern history, not because of anything else. You'd like to forget him for some things, but for his Green Lantern work, he was significant. That War of the Green Lantern still was a good storyline, could have been better, but this cover was pretty cool, and there were a lot of pretty iconic moments and artwork and that storyline, so that's why I picked this one.
Yeah, this is fantastic. This was something I was considering. Didn't end up in my list, but it was something I looked at and almost right clicked on to save as, because it's pretty fantastic. Adara looks great. Ion, Proselyte, the Butcher, Ophidian, and everybody looks fantastic here. Parallax looks. He doesn't look as bad as I've seen him. He doesn't look as great as I've seen him. He's a little sort of like an evolved middle ground. Like he's evolving from the best I've seen him into what he would become, but he's not there yet, so he's okay. But it's great, and like you said, it's colorful and everything, so it's definitely a really cool look.
Even with the Green Lantern movie preview included, well, we can overlook that.
Yeah, for sure. All right, my number 7 is a Blackest Night tie-in. It is a variant for issue 45. This is a Francis Manipal variant. And I think this might have been, this item either was before or during his run on The Flash. But this is one of my favorite Star Sapphire images. The sketchy quality that Francis Manipal really has in a lot of his work, not a really heavy ink style and everything, is very evident in the background of the image. The crystal she's sitting on, the power battery behind her, and I believe that's supposed to be the Predator behind the battery. But, you know, because of everything in front of it and the title logo and everything, it's maybe hard to make out for some people, but I believe the idea is that's supposed to
be. I think it kind of looks like it would be, yeah.
Yeah. But Carol herself is very ink heavy and on top, and she almost reminds me of a Bruce Timm character the way she's designed, the classic, more classic style. Even though she's wearing the at this time very slutty version of the Star Sapphire outfit, it looks very sleek and elegant in her pose, and she's I don't know, man. I don't know why it's reminding me of Bruce Timm so much, but the way her hair is flipped and flowing one way, the pose she's in, the hand on her face, and the energy sparking off her ring, this is bar none my favorite Star Sapphire image.
No, I like this too. It's kind of, in a way, it's an interesting contrast with the one you just picked, because this one is certainly busier. This has a lot more stuff going on. But yet, obviously Carol takes center stage on both these covers, much more literally in this cover. But again, because of where we were in the storyline, this cover also, and this issue also has a little more significance to me than the 18 cover. But I do like this cover. It really is bright, and I do like her sitting on the crystal. So it's kind of a nice touch.
For sure. All right, moving on to issue 6.
All right, so my number 6 is, it's hard for me not to usually include these items in when we do lists like this. I'm picking Green Lantern number 1, the first one from the Geoff Johns era in 2005. I like this cover. It's pretty simple. It says it, Hal Jordan with his ring finger raised. It's lit up. And also, this stands out to me also because this was what I have the promo poster of this when they were promoting the series, when I think I have it signed, when it was about when they were about to launch the series, and they were using this image of Hal as the main cover to there were tons of covers for this one, if I remember correctly, but this was the main, I think the main cover, and they were making this the promo poster, and just what this run would symbolize, obviously, and the importance of this issue, where it was going to take us, and following on the heels of Rebirth. That's the reason why I included this one.
Yeah, it's a statement piece. There's not much to dote on here in terms of the artwork, but because it's the issue one following what is, I don't know about critically acclaimed, because I actually don't know that, but at least highly praised Rebirth, this makes a statement of we're back, and that's all it needed to be.
Yeah, it's simple, but it says it, and it's a nice piece of art. So can't ask more than that.
For sure. So my number 6 is Brightest Day number 3. I won't spend a whole bunch of time on it, obviously, because there are no lanterns to be found anywhere on the cover. But very specifically, I mean Brightest Day 3, the variant by Ivan Reis, where Deadman is flying towards the Anti-Monitor, ready to punch him in the face while wearing a white lantern ring. So technically, I guess there's a lantern on it. But what's really cool about this, besides the fact, yes, I'm a Deadman fan, we all know this. This very particular cover is not just Ivan Reis artwork. It's colored differently than other Ivan Reis artwork. It's colored by Chuck Pierce. If you look at it, it's, oh man, I don't even know how to describe it. It's almost like I could see this being drawn on a really detailed chalkboard. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's really, really cool looking. Like, if I had an actual freaking house instead of a one-bedroom apartment, and wall space was that more of an option for me, I could see getting a full, print of this framed and on the wall. Just like if I were to have a space where I was like, a dedicated section for my Deadman fandom stuff, kind of in this one little corner, and this would be the framed print on the wall. I freaking love this artwork.
No, it's a very nice cover. And to be honest, not that I remember all that much about Brightest Day, since it was kind of a disappointment, but this was one of the more exciting parts of it, besides what Deathstorm was, the fact that we had the square off between Deadman and the Anti-Monitor, which was, I guess, momentarily where Deadman kind of thought that's why he had the ring. Why he was given the White Lantern ring, because he was meant to take out the Anti-Monitor, which obviously that was not what his role was or what he was meant to do. But it was cool, and it was a cool throwdown. And again, it kind of encapsulates one of the highlights of that whole series in this one cover.
There is a Deathstorm variant later on that I really enjoy, but it's not my favorite Deathstorm artwork, so I had to end up going with this one instead.
Can't have them all, Chad.
It's great, though. All right, number 5.
Number five for me is Green Lantern Rebirth number 3. And this cover, first of all, it's the three faces of Hal, literally. You have Spectre Hal, you got Parallax Hal, and you have Green Lantern Hal, number 1. But you know, the unholy trinity is there, which is a bit much, but it is certainly the trinity of the of what Hal really is, encapsulating all pieces of Hal Jordan, certainly at that moment. Plus, this is also the issue where we get the origin of Parallax. This is the issue where Kyle telling Ollie, we find out exactly what happened to Hal and everything else, and we get the everything leading to the more climactic issues with Sinestro, but Parallax pretty much no longer needing to assuage or try to subtly influence Hal. He doesn't really care anymore. He's just trying to take over Hal's body completely, and along leading to the next issue confrontation at the end, or the big reveal. But the big reveal at the end of what issue 4 with Sinestro being back. But this is where the ball really starts rolling. The first two issues were kind of setting the stage for big things to come, and issue 3 is when they really start paying off. So
yeah, this would have been one of my picks. Maybe there's another that supersedes it because I think it portrays the same idea but in a cleaner way. And you know exactly what I'm talking about when I say that. But this, I mean, for an overt depiction of that theme, this is still a pretty cool one. And it's just a really cool piece of art. It does look, I don't think, you know, and obviously Van Sciver is a very, another controversial figure these days later on, but speaking strictly only to the artwork, I don't want to say this is one of Van Sciver's best, because just Hal's face, the way it's contorted, the way the mask is fitting on him, and maybe the proportion of his shoulders and his arms. Like there's things that look off here that if I could make different choices here and there. But overall, it's still like just the theme of what it's getting across, the colors, the shadows. Also, I think there are other things involved here that help make up for any shortcomings I could say Van Sciver has on the page.
And because of how important Green Lantern and Rebirth is, and just how without Green Lantern Rebirth working the way you did, the entire golden age of Green Lantern, arguably, it's kind of hard to say that it's arguably because we've never had an era anything close to that. I mean, I think you would have to really be not objective, I would say, to say that from my popularity and certainly in a sales perspective, that the Geoff Johns era was absolutely the golden age of Green Lantern, and we've never come close before or after that. This all Rebirth itself just paves the way for that, because if Rebirth was a dud, then a whole lot of things would have turned out differently. And without the momentum of Rebirth, even if Geoff Johns' book sold well, it may never have achieved the heights that it, and without having that big, you know, the launching pad to, you know, the diving board to go hit it full bore, that we'll never know. But it's, yeah. And it's in this cover, like I said, this is where everything starts picking up. So, yeah.
My number 5 is Blackest Night number 8. This cover is by Ivan Reis or Ivan Hayes, you know, whatever we say it out there. There are a lot of covers in the Geoff Johns era of this theme, where we have a main lantern flying forward and a butt ton of lanterns behind him, whether it's a Green Lantern, where there was the Sinestro Corps during the Sinestro Corps War. Yeah. There was a Red Lantern cover like this. There's been a bunch of covers like this. But this one, I think, maybe my favorite, just because we get a lot of the different cores. And this is kind of a nice juxtaposition between those other covers of this theme, where they're all kind of exploding out of the page at you, versus what they tried to do in the final gatefold fold out of Green Lantern 20 at the end of Geoff Johns' run, where they took the same concept but said, we're going to do every lantern of every core in a massive gatefold spread, which was cool. We all kind of like that image for one reason or another, but it does end up feeling like a bit too much. This is a nice medium between that, in terms of having not only the new Guardians, but also the temporary recruits for during Blackest Night, in terms of, you know, Flash and Ganthet and the Atom and Wonder Woman and you know, Lex Luthor and all of them. They're all here, and you can see everybody in detail. But then there's also, you know, in the background, you can see even more lanterns. You can see Guy over there by Larfleeze and thing. We can see Worth over by Sinestro's Fist. You can see Kyle between Sinestro's Fist and Carol, you know, lots of stuff like that. So I also like the fact that it's almost like the polar opposite of the beginning of Blackest Night, where we saw the skull with the black rings flying out. Here they're all exploding out of the skull, and the skull is being shattered by the white light. So this one is just really cool. I think it's my favorite of those lanterns explodey images. I wish we would have got those images for all the rest of the cores in similar quality, but we never did get that. So I think this is as close as we're going to get to that outside of that Green Lantern 20 gatefold, which I don't know if you agree with me. It does feel like it's doing a bit too much there.
I could probably go along with that. This also, as you were comparing it to some of the other covers in this vein, this, unlike some of the other covers, this is not a direct copy. Most of those other covers were direct copies where the main character was in this literally the same exact pose. Mm-hmm. Whether it was Hal, whether it was Sinestro, whether it was Atrocitus, that's clearly the same basic template. You're just replacing the main lantern and then replace, and whatever core they represent, all those characters are going to take the role of other people when it first was a Green Lantern cover. This is not quite like that, because Sinestro is clearly flying out with both arms extended, and the covers you're talking about always had like one character like with their arm curved, kind of like curved. So I do like the fact that it's similar, but it's not the same, where you know, much like you mentioned the Darrow, you know, the Green Lantern 49 cover with all the rings in the air, that you know when they're doing a direct homage to that. This is a little more subtle. So I think it works better.
Yeah, it's definitely great. I wish we had a bigger version of this where Ivan Reis could have put more detail into Guy and Bleeze and Kyle and everybody else in the background. If you were to make this a much bigger high res image and you could just zoom in on people, you would see just as much detail as you see in the foreground. But you know, beggars can't be choosers. So this is good for what it had to be in terms of print.
Plus it's the end of the story.
That's true.
Alrighty. So number four for me is Green Lantern 42, Prelude to Blackest Night, otherwise known as the Agent Orange storyline. So this is the classic Hal Jordan, classic in quotes, but it's pretty well known cover of Hal Jordan, glowing orange, embracing the orange power battery, the Laura Fleece's battery, saying mine with mine, otherwise known as the mine, mine, mine cover. I have a t-shirt like this. I haven't worn it in ages. I need to start wearing some of my older lantern shirts more, but it's a cool cover. And obviously it made a cool t-shirt as well. It's pretty, it kind of set, it, this was our, this arc was our first introduction to Laura Fleece when he was a serious badass. And even though Hal truly never became an Orange Lantern in the storyline, not truly. But the point is that I think it encapsulates what the Orange Lanterns were. It was a really cool storyline because Jeff Johns was really hitting it out of the park at this point, because we went from Rage of the Red Lanterns right into Agent Orange, those two arcs. And then boom, 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 then it was right into Blackest Night, because what? Next issue was the Blackest Night one, right, with Black Hand? 43, I think at the tomb. I think that was at the tombstone, which almost made the list for me, but didn't. So yeah, I just think this is a really, really cool cover, and I think it is one of the ones that has kind of stood the test of time from images, or kind of iconic images from at least the countdown to Blackest Night.
Yeah, it's a great one. This is Philip Tan, right?
Yeah, I think it should have been. It should be. We know he was writing and doing the main book, so I think it's a Tan cover.
Yeah, he was. I think when we were reading it at the time, and I'll have to go back and listen to the episodes, and I don't even know if – I can't remember if I was there for this or not. I feel like – I don't know. I just remember
– You might not have been, or it would have been close, because I remember my first appearance on the show was we were talking about some of the Blackest Night minis too.
That's true. So. Regardless, as a reader – I felt the change from the kind of the Ethan Van Sciver, Ivan Reis sort of artwork, which I guess you could say, at least in that era, was probably the closest you could get to what you would call a DC house style.
Yeah.
What to the really sketchy, almost watercolor detail look that Philip Tan had in this arc. I feel like I feel like it was a bit jarring, but it was pulled off so well, especially with all the idea to have the Orange Lantern have always like he's always on fire, basically, with the amount of energy that he has stored up in him. It really helped, I think, that just come across on the page. So I think I remember as a reader getting over it fast and just sort of accepting this, because if I didn't have everything in the Geoff Johns 3-volume omnibuses that I have here on my shelf, one of the very first individual trades I would have grabbed is the Agent Orange one. Cause that was a really well done one. And you know, it's hard to say looking back on a series like the Geoff Johns run and picking a favorite arc of that and going, you know what, the Agent Orange stuff was actually really great, because fondly remembering the time in which we had an interstitial artist while we waited for the main artist to catch up on the upcoming books is not something that happens quite a lot.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true.
My number is 4. Yeah. My number 4 is another variant. Surprise, surprise. My number 4 is issue 38. And it's, I don't know, a variant is a strong word. Basically, the main cover of Green Lantern 38 is Hal as a Green Lantern and Sinestro as a Yellow Lantern, front and center, just fending off a bunch of Red Lanterns. So you don't really see on the page. You just see them, their claws and stuff sort of reaching for them as they fight them off. The variant, I say it wasn't really a variant, is because it was actually a second printing of this issue that got a different cover. I would say a variant is it's put on the shelf or put out for sale at the same time as the newsstand edition. A second printing is obviously still a variant cover, but it's a different thing altogether. So what's interesting, though, about the second printing is it's straight up a splash page from the interior art of the story, where Hal goes full red and starts attacking St. Walker and Worth as Sinestro is put in that construct electric chair and Atrocitus is cheering him on. I really like that one. The fact the stance that Hal is in is a very I don't know what it is. It's a very powerful stance. It's like he's stomping forward and just letting loose. And the blood napalm coming out of his mouth, and he's basically screaming at the sky. I don't know, man. I really like that, especially when you compare it to the regular cover of issue 38, which, to be fair, is not one of my favorite artworks of the entire series. Wouldn't even probably crack my top 25 or top 30. I don't enjoy that regular art for some reason. Just taking the splash interior by Ivan Reis and slapping it on the cover in high def, I like it. I think it's a really good work. They do this sometimes with second printings or variants is just straight up take a splash from the interior and put it on the cover. Sometimes it doesn't work. In this case, it did.
Yeah, I agree. I do agree that it works. It works very well. And I do have the original, because I do recognize that Sinestro and Hal cover. So I don't think I have this cover that you're talking about, but yeah, it's and it's a good, and they made a good choice as far as picking the the right splash page. Basically, it does kind of again encapsulates what's going on in the story to draw people in if they don't know this already. That it's a good selling point. It's what it does, what a cover does well, which is grab you and make you want to touch the book, open it.
Yeah, 100%. All right, what are we at?
Number three. So my number three is Green Lantern number 50, which is the Parallax Rebirth cover, continuing the tradition, or probably, to be fair, probably creating the real tradition of having Green Lantern number 50 issue having Parallax in it. So before that, we only there was only volume three.
The original.
Yeah, the original. So that was not really a tradition. It was a one-time thing. You know, it can't be cyclical if it only just happened one time. So this is cool. This is, again, unfortunately, it is monkey. But because of the coloring on it, you can't really see some of the flaws in Doug Monkey's parallax. And you don't see the jagged teeth, so you got to give credit where credit's due. At least on this cover, you really can't see the jagged teeth all that well. But you have Hal Jordan as Parallax with his Green Lantern ring on, which, again, plot-wise, he should have been better at controlling Parallax because of the ring then. But he's recharging, and where we were in the story, of course, he willingly became Parallax because of the concept, as shaky as it is, that the Spectre, who is now Black Lantern Spectre, was afraid of Parallax. That there was some inherent fear about the Parallax entity in the Spectre. So Hal became Parallax to take on and what take out Black Lantern Spectre. It's a cool cover, and obviously it's the first time that Hal became Parallax since, I guess you can count Green Lantern Rebirth because he momentarily became Parallax again, but since he died, this is the first real time that he certainly was fully alive and actively Parallax again.
Yeah, for sure. This is definitely monkey artwork for sure.
Yeah.
Which is good because, again, at least in this era, we have now fully embraced the idea that when somebody is possessed by Parallax, they are physically distorted, which gets even more crazy later on when, like, Flash gets possessed by Parallax and so on and so forth. So the idea of, like, that problem that I have with Doug Monkey's art and how he does some human faces doesn't exist here because Hal is supposed to look slightly non-human. And so then you do that, and then you again, when you do anything in playing with light and shadows, which is really great. It's one of the unspoken benefits of being a Lantern fan in terms of the artwork you get as a fan of this franchise, because it so revolves around the concept of light and color in various forms. When you get somebody who can play with shadow and stuff very well, depending on your source of light and how that casts a shadow all across somebody's face or the armor they're wearing or whatever, where the light is most intense or not, and so on and so forth, it helps make the art stand out to you because you're focused on that power. So I think that's pretty cool. I don't have a lot of issues with this one. There's no problems that I have. It's a pretty great representation. Again, I think I feel like we should pick one in terms of the Parallax Rebirth or 50th issue. Like, having them both there seems a little much. So I think it's sort of like that St. Walker issue. I think it sort of falters from the over plastering of their various icons and stuff. But at least with this one, there's not much of a background in the first place. You are just focused on the character, so it's not as bad as the St. Walker one in terms of taking up that beautiful artwork.
That's true. Plus, I do remember how cool this was when we got the solicits. Mm-hmm. We got the solicits for this. You knew it was going to be cool and interesting because of the fact that, you know, they were making it clear that, ever so briefly, but Hal was going to be Parallax again.
Yeah, for sure. All right, my number three is Green Lantern number 16. This is Ethan Van Sciver artwork with Hal front and center with Alan behind him. This is not the best Ethan Van Sciver artwork. Again, I don't know if it's his colorists or what helping or hindering him, because When we talk about colorists and stuff, sometimes they can have a lot in terms of, like, why and where we have shadow involved on somebody. Other times that's on the artist because they're inking it that way, if they ink themselves or they're doing that. But Hal's face is, I think, overly dark here, darkened. And the proportions of Alan in the background look a little off, but the sheer level of detail in the city in the background, the flames and the smoke and the fire, the fact that we have Hal and Alan together on the cover in such an early issue of this new run, early, relatively speaking, of this run, and them playing together here in this energy, I don't know. It's we didn't try to like modernize Alan's costume or anything. It's very clearly his classic costume. The flame in the foreground is from the flame on his fist. It's very clearly wrapping around him. I think the light is playing pretty well. I think the only thing I would say I would critique it for and why it didn't get even higher on the list is the coloring choice to have the energy coming off of Alan and the energy coming off of Hal relatively the same shade of green. I think there was if there was a difference in the shade of green between the two of them, it would have made it pop a little more. But otherwise, I mean, it's just it's an early issue before we get caught up with all the various Lantern stuff. We took the time to talk to focus in on Alan a little bit and that side of the mythos just for half a second before the world went freaking bonkers in terms of all the shit that Johns was about to introduce. And we got these two teaming up, which, you know, Hal is back and it's nice to have that. So, and plus there was that brief moment with Alan during Rebirth.
I was just thinking that because Alan, even going back to Day of Judgment, Alan was Hal's biggest champion.
Right. So them having this moment means a lot. You know, obviously, like I said, I have things negative to say about this artwork, which I didn't say about some of the previous ones that are lower in my list. But because of what this means and where it takes place and everything, I think the meaning behind it gives more weight to the art itself.
No, I think that says it well. I agree from a proportional perspective. There's something a little off with Alan. I think Alan by himself, other than the costume design, which is great, you know, using that costume. I do think other than that, Alan's not the strongest part of this cover. I think Hal is definitely the strongest part of this cover. Mm-hmm. But again, what it symbolizes and like you said, the Hal and Alan together, that's always cool when we have that. So I think that's was important. And again, this was like I mentioned before, this is right like in the as we're building up to everywhere and everything's about to go crazy as pretty much once we get past like issue 20 or 21, whatever it is, that this is just Geoff Johns telling good stories and making you interested, not realizing that, you know, what cards he still has up his sleeve that he's about to play.
Yeah, absolutely.
So my number two is Green Lantern Rebirth number one. And I'm talking about the classic. This is the standard cover, I think, of if you have a you see Hal Jordan as a Spectre in the upper left, the mid to upper left. He's holding the central power, holding his personal power battery. But you see, which was lost by some people, you know, early on that in that you see the reflection of Parallax, the upside down, obviously the inverted image of Parallax kind of like snarling. And of course, we didn't realize the significance of the stupid teeth at the time. Oh God, that still bothers me. But this is dealing with, again, in a way, this is dealing with the three faces of Hal again, even though you don't see Hal really as Green Lantern, but he is holding the power battery. So that symbolizes Hal as the Green Lantern. You see Hal as the Spectre. And of course you see Hal as Parallax in the metal part of the power battery. So again, it's a beautiful piece of art. It also it's being a little more subtle about what we're about to find out in the story. But again, it's the opening salvo of one of the great Green Lantern stories of all time, which, like we mentioned, paved the way for so much. And this got the ball rolling content wise in the first issue. A very interesting first issue. And with things that we didn't even realize how important it was with Black Hand, you know, this is where Black Hand loses his hand and things like that. So yeah, this is a really awesome cover.
Yeah. Like, as you mentioned, it's the same theme as the Unholy Trinity thing, but just condensed and subtle and really beautifully done with a reflection and everything. You mentioned, you know, you don't get to see how much. I would argue you get to see him more because, you know, at least when Hal was the Spectre, the one thing that he kept was the mask, which Spectre.
Right. That is true. You could read into the mask symbolizing him as Green Lantern more than the Spectre. But
also the idea of the symbol reflected in his eyes and And even more on the nose is the fact that, you know, while he's always been the Spectre, he's never spouted the symbol, and now the symbol is literally burning its way through the Spectre.
Yeah, that is true. That is also true.
So that's pretty cool. Yeah, and, you know, again, as I spoke about earlier, just a moment ago, you know, when you're a Lantern fan, you know, the idea of playing with light in art is always fun. And the fact that the Spectre has always been like this ghostly figure and really pale, the way the light's playing off of his face and the way even the light is playing off of itself and the smoke rising off of the symbol and everything and the different the shades and the distortion effect and the lantern. I just, yeah, this is, if I were to pick a Rebirth and I just, you know, in terms of peeling back the curtain for everybody playing along at home, I just straight up told Mark I knew you'd be picking stuff from Rebirth, so I'm not even going to try. You can have it. If I were going to pick something from Rebirth, this would have been it.
Cool. Just like I acquiesced for Blackest Night too. That was kind of our trade-off. Once we both knew we were heading in those directions, we just kind of like, you take that, I take this.
When speaking of you take that, I take this. My number two is Green Lantern number 41, another variant. This is a variant also during Agent Orange, I think, but a very different variant for the Agent Orange time, because it is a Eddie Barrows artwork, but it is Hal with the Blue Lantern ring and the Green Lantern ring kneeling in front of the reader, but split down the middle, like literally split down the middle. He is half Blue Lantern, half Green Lantern. And the Green Lantern side, John is flying towards him. And the Blue Lantern side, St. Walker is flying towards him. And behind them all is, you know, the shadowy contours or contrasted outlines of some really pissed off Guardians who are angry that he has the ring in the first place. Which is, I don't know, man, just it's. You would think the idea of literally splitting a character down the middle is just too cheesy in the first place to make something look really cool, because you're like, oh, come on, you know, you can't make it a little jagged or a little more natural. That's kind of stupid and cheesy or whatever. This looks really well, especially done in this Eddie Barrows style, which is not hyper detailed, as you can see, like on John's face and St. Walker and everything here. This is a more... this is almost painted design, sort of, instead of like ink and pen and everything like that. The colors are extremely vibrant. And the fact that this is a variant for the Agent Orange story arc and there's no orange to be found anywhere on this is also a crazy juxtaposition. But this is just a really great piece of artwork.
Yes, this was the only one. The only one of the covers that Chad and I both had to start with. So, yeah, I think on the surface, it does seem like it's an odd choice. Agent Orange arc, say that 1,000 times fast. Except for the fact that we do remember that was what Hal was at the time. He was once he had the blue ring on, and after he was infected by the red.
Yep.
That he ended up having both rings on. He was split. He was dual, and the only way he got rid of it was in the Agent Orange storyline. So it makes sense on some basic level that they did a variant cover on this. But yet it is strikingly weird and stands out because of the color contrast. But I think it works very well. And of course it's clearly a very 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 beautiful cover.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I actually have this one in my collection. It's been a while since I've looked, but I'm pretty sure I do.
All right. Should we do it?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So my number one, it could have been number two. There's jokes to probably be made there, but I'm not going there. Green Lantern Rebirth, number six. So this is the big shebang. This is the end of the entire story arc. This is where, you know, the four horsemen... and I know it should be Corman, but it doesn't sound as good when you're thinking about the four horsemen. That's why I always say that. And Kilowog, that this is when they all rally together. They fight. They put Parallax back in the central power battery. Plus, this is the issue when he decks Batman, isn't it? Right in the beginning, right
I think it's at the end of that story, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like the beginning of this issue when he because they're about to go do their thing, and Batman doesn't want to let Hal go, and I'm pretty sure this is the issue where he decks him. A great Green Lantern moment, but this is the culmination of that great storyline. The cover symbolizes everything. The soon to be reborn Green Lantern Corps back together again. And reformed, and it just sets the stage for so much. And it's just a really, really, really powerful cover with Hal dead center, and that's why it just had to be on this list for me.
Yeah, for sure. Much in the same way, like the Green Lantern number one cover is just like it needed to make a statement. I feel like the end of Rebirth also did the same thing. It's, you know, in advance of the cover for Green Lantern one. But this is just, we're back. Yeah, that's all it had to say. We're back, and everybody you're looking for is back on board. And oh yeah, and Kilowog. Which, did we ever explain how he was alive? I forget.
Kyle's the reason Kilowog was alive.
Oh yeah, that's right. Okay. Because I kept remembering that the Dark Kilowog, right?
Dark Lantern Kilowog, but yeah. I forget what issue it was, but Kyle basically saved Kilowog and brought him out from being attacked by all his Bolovac Vixers or whatever. And when he came back, he was fully alive again.
Yeah. This one, the musculature on some of it is a little weird. I think my problem here is probably coloring. Kilowog's face it looks a little weird. In comparison to the other lanterns, I get that maybe that's because he's an alien and the idea he's supposed to look different from the others, but he ends up looking more like he's painted instead of drawn. I don't know. It's strange looking to me. There's something off about it, but it doesn't take away from the power of the image overall. So it doesn't end up mattering at the end of the day.
Cool.
All right, my number one is Blackest Night number 6, where we have the new Guardians on full display. Hal front and center, fist up to his chest, his emblem burning, the light, casting a shadow on his forehead and everything. We have Sinestro. We have Atrocitus looks incredible in this particular image. Saint Walker, stoic, quiet, very calm amongst the insanity of the rest of the background. Indigo One on full display here. Carol looking a little creepy too. I don't know, man. This is the image for Blackest Night, basically, I think, for a lot of people. As a matter of fact, I think this was made into so many different pieces of artwork, including like posters. In terms of, not just posters, but like gimmick product that was put on sale at places like either Hot Topic or Spencer's, where like this image was printed on like a piece of plastic and then put in like a little light box where you could turn it on and the light would shine from behind it and this image would glow or whatever. I think I remember seeing that at one point. I was tempted to get it, but you know, being in my 30s or whatever, I was just like, these little tacky light boxes are probably not the best. I say as I have action figures on hooks all around here. But this is the image of Blackest Night. And it's not just the fact that it's colorful or really well done, but the level of detail for each of these characters, just whether they're in the foreground or the background, is crazy. And the energy just sort of smoking off of them and coalescing together in the background. I don't know. Especially when Blackest Night, the event, has been so dark up until this point, especially even image-wise on the covers, whether it's the skull in the first issue or Hal alone against a bunch of Black Lanterns behind him on the second or third issue, and just like all these things. This is just a burst of color, like, oh, shit. I think of the new Guardians images, because there were a couple. I think there was a similar cover to this for Green Lantern in a Blackest Night tie-in issue of the main Green Lantern series. And then there was something sort of like this when the new Guardians got the temporary recruits got recruited. There was like a cover like similar to this for all of them instead. But this is it. This is the one. And there's a reason this one was heavily marketed.
Green Lantern 53, I think, is the cover you're thinking of, which is unfortunately a Monkey cover. So I do have this poster. I got it at Toys R Us. I remember I got it at Toys R Us. It's still on display. It's next to where my film cells are from the Green Lantern movie. It's behind the little top part of a hutch that is where I display some of my central power batteries, or the power battery replicas, but they're central power battery scale for some figures, and especially the HeroClix. Perfect scale for HeroClix. And a lot of the DC Direct figures and things like that. So this is iconic. If I was going to take one of the Blackest Night issues, I was going to do one of the covers. Yeah, this probably would have been the one that I would have taken too. So it was a good choice. There were a bunch of cool choices that obviously neither one of us took. You know, some of the White Lantern, any of the other White Lantern Sinestro covers, like from Green Lantern, that was an option for me. Those were cool. There's a bunch of them. Even the one we just mentioned, Green Lantern 53, part of Brightest Day. Mm-hmm. There were some covers I did consider. There's more War of the Green Lantern covers that were worthy of contention and consideration, and there were a few in the Volume 5 run, but not as many. Maybe some related to the Indigo Tribe arc and the final, maybe Green Lantern 20, as in two also. Green Lantern 20, the last issue with Geoff Johns, just also because of these, how it wrapped up his run and how it, again, closed. It would have been appropriate, I guess, if I took that one, because I took the first issue. I took Rebirth number one. I took Green Lantern number one. So probably you can make a strong case. I probably should have squeezed in Green Lantern 20 just because that completely closes the Geoff Johns era. But nonetheless.
Yeah, no, I just, this cover is great. I love that it's blocked in its color without being blocky because of the energy. You know, like Sinestro has his dedicated space with his dedicated sort of energy, but it flows off of him and merges into Atrocitus's red flame. So it doesn't look like it's just completely blocked off. The other thing I really like about it is you could, in theory, get rid of Atrocitus, Larflee, St. Walker, and Indigo One, and it could still be a crazy good cover with Carol on at one shoulder and Sinestro on the other. Obviously, you would want to add some sort of a background or maybe change the perspective a little bit, but it would still be a sick-ass cover with just those three.
Yeah, I mean, objectively speaking, while I do agree with what you said earlier, that I think Atrocitus is other than Carol, Atrocitus is the one that is the star of all the other lanterns behind Hal. Hal is clearly the star of the cover, and Hal looks the best of everybody on the cover. Carol probably looks second best, but of all the others, I do think Atrocitus actually it's a better representation of Atrocitus than Sinestro. And Larflee's and St. Walker are kind of like stuck in there and skinny. I mean, they are kind of skinny compared to other characters to begin with, but they are kind of stuck in these little available space. But your point is valid. If the cover was slightly designed differently, they just wanted to make it more of a Hal-centric cover with almost like the two voices that whisper to him the most, the angel and the devil on his shoulder, that you could have made, that would have still been a good cover. You were correct.
Yeah. You mentioned Green Lantern 20. I would be remiss because I saved this. It was not in a cover. It very well could have been if it was drawn differently. But, you know, the idea of a cover is it's a splash image, the best image of the series. I think one of the best images, bar none, of the Green Lantern Geoff Johns run appeared in Green Lantern 20, the second to last page before the gatefold of all the various cores. And it's when Ivan Reis does the image of Hal being chosen by the ring in front of Abin's crashed ship. And the costume is burning onto him for the first time in the circle where his emblems goes is blank because he's a rookie and he's gripping the power battery. If that could have been made into a cover, that would have been my number one. But I think because of the way it's oriented and everything, I don't think it could have ever been a cover that made any sense. but I'm sorry, I had to mention it. If we're we're talking favorite covers, we're essentially talking favorite splash images of this run, and this could have made an incredible cover if done slightly differently.
No, that's true. Green Lantern 19 also had a pretty memorable cover with all the power batteries being destroyed.
That's true.
That was another one which, I mean, again, to be fair, I there was enough from Volume 4, and we won't go into the discussions Chad and I had about how to narrow this down, but there was enough from Volume 4 and from Rebirth that I didn't spend I didn't spend a lot of time going through Volume 5, but there are actually quite a few decent covers from Volume 5 during the Johns part of it. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's like, I mean, even Green Lantern 11 with Black Hand, that is really a spooky cover. So that's really cool. And it is the golden age for a storytelling reason, but there's a hell of a lot of good covers. And like you mentioned, if we were, which would be much more complicated, if we were doing like either best splash pages or best pages of art, period, that there'd be so much to choose from during this. The one thing that is annoying looking at all these covers from the Volume 5 is there's way too many friggin' Simon covers.
Yeah, that's
true. You know why? Because he literally was created in these issues. But my God, there's so many variant covers and so many covers just with Simon being front and center. It's like, oh my God.
Do you have an honorable mention that almost made your list that didn't?
More than any of the others? Let me briefly go back and look at Volume 4.
I have a unique one.
Go ahead, you go, and I will peruse and see if I can come up with one above all others that I would have put.
I don't know if you can picture it in your head. It is Green Lantern number 28, and it's titled Judgment Day, and it's Lara on the Green Lantern symbol in chains in front of lots of people with the Guardian faces behind her and Alpha Lanterns around her. Hal is standing there with her along with Tomar too. And her hair is sort of whipping back and forth. This is obviously before the Red Lanterns thing happens and sort of towards the end of the whole Alpha Lanterns thing. I don't know what it is about this cover, but I really do love this cover with Lara.
It's really, I'm looking at these. I mean, you do have some really cool covers. You obviously have Green Lantern 23, which is the homage to Daryl's cover.
Yeah.
Which Hal with all the Sinestro rings on his hands. I would have to say, as much as, and there was another one I just saw. I mean, Green Lantern 40 second printing is cool too, because it's another Blue Lantern Blue Lantern Green Lantern Hal split.
Yeah,
that one's kind of cool. The one I probably would say was the runner up, because I did kind of mention that. I think Green Lantern 43 with Black Hand.
Yeah.
I think that is because first of all, that was a fantastic issue by itself.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing with Bruce Wayne's tombstone, which of course really was in Bruce Wayne, but still the point is that the reality is that's going to set the stage for everything that's going to be happening in Blackest Night. And plus that's where we got the confirmation and introduction of several more entities in that issue. Mm-hmm. And that's when, of course, Black Hand blows his brains out and becomes the black entity.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would pick that cover, not just because it's a great cover by itself, but because of the symbolic nature of it and what it was about to. So that's probably the one based on pure art that I did consider before I locked in. I think the Adara cover was the last one that I chose.
Yeah.
That replaced Green Lantern, 41 that you took. I think 43 was the other one I had open, but I already wrote down Adara and I said, well, that's it. So if it's not 43, again, because of symbolism and what it means, plus it was a cool cover anyway, because it was a wraparound, Green Lantern 20 from Volume 5, just because it would have ended the Geoff Johns run. And I have all the other important number one issues. You know, the Rebirth and in the series, so that probably would have been, and considering it's a Monkey cover, Green Lantern 43 is a pretty damn good cover.
Well, yeah, no, not just that. Also, it's Geoff Johns' favorite issue of his run. I almost picked it as well because I have it slabbed. Slabbed and graded and signed by Jeff Johns and Doug Monkey both.
Nice.
So because I knew, you know, I knew I was going to send something in for their joint signing. I knew I had a wealth of things to choose from, but the minute I heard it was Jeff Johns' favorite, I was like, okay, it has to be this. It helps kick off the whole thing. It's a creepy issue. It is, honestly speaking, one of Doug's best artworks. It's creepy. It's I don't know. I had to, so I ended up sending it in and getting it graded and slabbed. I didn't end up choosing it because it was such a personal choice as opposed to just being an artistic favorite. Much in the same way, I almost added in the Final Crisis Rage of the Red Lanterns cover because that was my first issue.
Yeah, I thought for some reason when you showed it to me that you had that one.
Oh, I showed you 12 images I had.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, it didn't make the final cut. Yeah.
Yeah, that's another one because, again, some of my criteria was not just the cover by itself, but what the issue was and what was what was in the issue and how important it was. And obviously Rage of the Red Lanterns was a huge issue because we got Atrocitus, we got the Red Lanterns, we got St. Walker. We got the stupid dangling question about what Hal was going to ask Sinestro, which was completely anticlimactic. It's like, boxers or briefs? I mean, that would have been just as good a question.
The variant cover for 61 during Brightest Day, where the Spectre is taking on the Butcher by the horns, and Hal is flying toward him. That was a pretty cool ass cover. I remember that one. The Brightest Day cover issue 56, where the variant where St. Walker is gripping onto the Orange Lantern battery, and he says, "All will be mine."
I almost clicked on that to look, but again, St. Walker looks so horrible, even in a small thumbnail. It's like, I'm not going to bother. Green Lantern 57 would have been a better one because it's the Dead Man variant. When they were doing all those Brightest Day variant covers that connected to each other.
Yeah, so, that was
so,
cool.
So that is one, even when we were talking. Technically, Green Lantern 52, I really liked the non-variant. The with Sinestro was the White Lantern. That one I like a great deal. There's many good covers, especially even towards the tail end of volume four. So many of the War of the Green Lantern covers are really
good. Oh yeah, the Sinestro cover with Hal is a Sinestro Corps member front and center.
Number 65. 65 was something I considered. It was, I think, probably 65 was one of the ones I considered when I made my initial 10. I don't think when I was trying to come up with the one I was going to replace Green Lantern 41 with. But I did. But then I looked at it, and it's like, again, it's Monkey. And it's like, well, it's cool conceptually, but not. But again, there's so many cool covers. To be fair, War of the Green Lanterns had a lot of good covers. They really did.
Yeah,
they did. But it was fun. That's why it was tough to make this we didn't want to make it any broader a range because as it is, there's so many covers that kind of being shortchanged here. But I do think the majority of the best covers of the Johns run, I think definitely started. It didn't happen until we got around Sinestro Corps. I know you picked several before. I picked the number one issue for this and number 12, but I think just looking at the gallery now, they really started picking up pretty much once you got to like Green Lantern 36 and you started getting into the Rage of the Red Lanterns. I think that's when the covers really started picking up and being much more impactful and cooler, generally speaking.
Yeah, you're right too about volume 5. I think if I were to pick anything else other than the Black Hand issue that I chose, I think it would have to be from somewhere in that Indigo arc. And if in terms of the best art of the best covers of the last 20 issues.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. Green Lantern number 9 is cool with Black Hand face, you know, just dominating. That one's cool. Indigo Rising, Green Lantern 10 was cool. Mm-hmm. And Green Lantern, like Green Lantern 11, is really creepy.
Yeah, it's like a issue 43 variant.
Yes, it really is.
Yeah.
So that was a cool arc when Hal and Sinestro had to take on Black Hand, which of course didn't go well for them. And the annual
into my issue 12 that I picked. It's right before.
Yep. Yeah. And the Green Lantern annual, which I think that's when that might have been the issue Hal and Sinestro ended up getting trapped in that issue, which would make sense because it would have led to Sinestro sending his ring out to find Simon.
Yeah.
Are they both willing that Sinestro's actual real ring to go find a replacement that was both of basically had the qualities of both of them? The only interesting thing about Simon that they continue never to explore.
Speaking of issue 17, I know it's a Simon cover, but with all the other lanterns.
I saw that too. I did. Yes, because it is. It's unfortunately Simon centric, like almost all these covers in this range. But yes, it is. I did see that too. 18's not bad either. 18's not a bad. And like I said, 18, 19, and 20 are good.
You said 19 and.
You're looking at the Alfred E. Newman horrible cover, right?
Yeah, the Mad Magazine one.
Yeah, yeah. I almost just said, other than that variant. It's like, what a steaming pile that is. Well, if you like Alfred E. Newman, it's fine. It's kind of like if you go back to Volume 4, we go to the latter part of Volume 5, with the Marvin the Martian cover.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. When we do the Venditti era, that's probably almost guaranteed to be on the list just because it's Marvin the Martian.
You know, you're right about 19, though. Like, it almost did make my list, but then part of me was like, it's just a bunch of broken batteries.
Yeah, again, it's symbolism again. It could have been, it was creepy on one level, and it was symbolic, even though it wasn't necessarily accurate, but entirely. But the reality is, conceptually it's cool, but yes, it's a relatively plain piece of art. So that's another reason why it didn't go very high on my list as far as consideration from this volume.
Yeah. No, I gotcha. This was fun though. It was good. It made me want to get my. See now I. Now I started skipping forward into the Venditti run, and I fell across issue 35, the Monsters of the Month cover with Parallax on top of Hal, and Hal's face distorting into the toothy grin. I know you hate the teeth, but this cover is...
My friggin' mouse just locked up. Give me a hold on.
No,
you said 35?
35, the variant, Monsters of the Month cover. It's almost like Sinestro, or Parallax is trying to eat Hal's head.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Variant A.
Yeah, Sorry, I just stumbled across. And then, of course, those Darwin Cook variants later on with 37. Yeah, this is a great era to tackle. When we get to it at some point. Like, I do enjoy doing this cover to cover. And, oh, man, when they did the movie...
I just saw that too. I remember the 2001 variant. Yes, Green Lantern 40, the 2001 Space Odyssey variant. That was kind of cool. The sad part is, despite the fact that we ended up getting Parallax in this, eventually there was not really the cover for Green Lantern 50. That's both of them suck.
Yeah, Green Lantern, the final issue, at least of until it becomes Hal Jordan in the core, Green Lantern 52, the variant with the Sinestro. That is such a sick cover. I know we've seen that artwork again, even at the beginning of this series. It's just a recolored or repurposed version. But that is such a sick looking cover when it's the Yellow Lantern version of Sinestro.
Yeah, that is true. That is absolutely true. Which reminds me of
the coloring book variant. Yeah, there's lots in the Venditti era.
Yeah, and reminds me of the Cullen Bunn book, which is arguably the best Green Lantern book we've had since Geoff Johns left. Even though there are some, to be fair, even as I say that, if you look at everybody's who's written the main Green Lantern book since Geoff Johns left, Robert Venditti is still probably the best. He just has trouble sticking the landing with almost nine stories out of 10, but he did tell some interesting stories once he got past that Durlin crap, which again, Jeremy should have learned that lesson. But
before, and he made us care about characters like 2-6 and Gorin's son and Box and all of them. So
yeah, and just like we know, Van Jensen's run was underrated on Core, and it's just too bad he never got a chance to. Just when he was finally spreading his wings, is when they cut him off at the knees to do the relaunch. But
for sure. All right. Anything else we want to talk about? I know a trailer dropped today, but do we want to save that talk for another time?
Hey, of course, Chad must be talking about Ironheart, of course.
Yeah. I knew that. I know that trailer came out today. I didn't even bother to look at it.
Again, will I watch that? I will start. I mean, I still haven't touched Daredevil. I can't even tell you I'm going to. I may wait to season two. Because I don't care. I don't. Just Charlie Cox Daredevil just means nothing to me. Now that series is done, I still haven't touched it. Will I watch Ironheart? I will give it a shot. Do I care? Not really. Do I think it should exist? Not really. But I'll give it a shot. As far as the Superman trailer goes, which you're alluding to, see, it's so weird. Superman's nowhere near my favorite character. So my attachment to Superman is always hovers. It's weird because I actually don't think my attachment to Superman is stronger than my attachment to Batman, despite this oversaturation we get of Batman. Maybe because Batman just, at the end of the day, is just a non-superpowered person. I thought the trailer was fine. I think there were some cool things in the trailer. Visually, it looks cool. I don't know. I think it does give you a little bit of what's going on story-wise, which kind of confirms some of the rumors about this, you know, the social media aspect and it's going to be a big factor in this movie as Superman, you know, how does Superman deal with, you know, in the era of social media and being canceled at any moment and being under the critical eye of knee-jerk reactions all the time. There are some cool things in it, but did it pump me like it probably pumped you or other people to tell, oh yeah, now I'm really on board? No, I think it was better than the first trailer, but those were my initial thoughts.
I'm already on board, so this doesn't detract anything for me. The more I watch it, the more I like it. I feel like we might be leaning towards the whole the change that DC made in terms of, like, it was truth, justice, and the American way, and then they changed it to get rid of the American way thing. Because Superman is for all the people of Earth, not just America. It feels like they might be touching on that a little bit. I don't know. We'll see. That seems like it might go almost hand in hand with what you were saying about the social media aspect could be kind of part and parcel, one and the same. Regardless, yeah, you know, the shot that we saw of Guy and the way the hand kind of came up out of the ground and he just sort of flicked his wrist and backhanded him away. I mean that adds to what I was saying in the teaser that we got when he shot his ring at the crowd and just to sort of scare him or spook him off or whatever, when they were confronting Superman in that building. Yep. The way he just did it so effortlessly. Again, here he literally just waves his hand and it's just a big construct hand comes out of the ground and just like backhands some people away. So that's pretty cool. Getting a better look at some of the other characters and a good look at Metamorpho this time around.
Yep. You got more.
Looks like he's being used by Luther at least for a good bit of it, because I think in that cage he's just back there producing kryptonite to keep Superman at bay when Superman's in that cell. But you know, regardless, I think it looks fun. It doesn't take anything away. I do like the moments with Ma and Pa Kent. That was cool to see.
I don't think I like the casting there. I don't think I like the casting. I know.
Yeah,
some people...
I think I need to see more about it. It didn't do anything for me one way or the other. It was just nice to see them, and then particularly the lines that they were saying.
Right.
And it was nice to hear Ma say, "I cleaned your boots for you." You know, that's, you know, the type of motherly love that you want to see Superman receive. So, you know, I enjoyed it overall. It was nice to see. I was looking forward to it, and they announced they were going to be releasing it today.
Yeah, it was cool, and I did watch. Like I said, I watched the Ironheart thing first, and that's I think that is June. Ironheart's June. That's right around the corner. And like and Peacemaker is not until August. And so yeah, we'll see. I'm very interested to see how Superman does. I want to see what the opening weekend of Superman, the opening of considering how bad the DC movies had been doing.
Did the trailer say tickets are on sale now or
no? No. They're not on sale yet.
Okay.
A lot of these things are going on late in the day. I mean, late in the game. I mean, when I say late in the day, that like the Karate Kid trailers, the Karate Kid tickets, I think just went on sale today, and they come out, and that movie opens up on the Thursday after Memorial Day.
Hmm.
So they just something else just went on sale that we got tickets for. It's neither here nor there, but Ballerina. That's it. Ballerina went on sale actually first, and that's in the first week.
That's that John Wick movie, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a John Wick spinoff.
Yeah.
I think it'll probably be a little bit more. I don't think it'll take too much longer. I think it may very well be within the next few weeks, a week and a half, somewhere maybe around Memorial Day's next weekend. As we were recording this, that maybe once we get to somewhere around June 1st, maybe they'll go on sale. But as of now, no.
Gotcha. No, I'm looking forward to it. I'm likely seeing it opening weekend.
So I guess we might get a Superman episode of this one.
We might. It's just a matter of if I can get tickets. That's all.
Oh, you'll be able to get tickets, Chad.
No, I just mean in juxtaposition of, you know, when I get paid, if I have other obligations, so on and so forth.
I'm waving my hand Jedi style. You will get tickets, Chad.
But no, it'll be fun. Do you what is Mark seen, or are you good?
What the hell did I? My head's a sieve. What the hell did I see last week? Oh, I saw Clowns in a Cornfield. Clown in a Cornfield. It was okay. I know it's actually based on a book, which is funny. The mere fact that there's a horror book called Clown in a Cornfield. I thought the cast was good. It was, and the kills were good. So that's what a lot of people like. If the kills are creative or gory, people like that. Kind of like Until Dawn was the same way. That even if you had no knowledge of the source material, at least you had that working in its favor. And then I saw Reanimator. They re-released Reanimator on Monday. So we saw Reanimator's. I forget which anniversary it is. 40th. Yeah, it must be the 40th. And then this week, it is Final Destination. So Final Destination, as we're recording this, I will see tomorrow. And then next week is Lilo and Stitch. Got to fit in Mission Impossible somehow. That's the dupe, since they both come out. Those two movies come out the same weekend. Already had the Lilo and Stitch tickets. Got to fit in Mission Impossible somewhere since the weekend after that. It's Karate Kid and then Ballerina. So that's going to be the challenge, fitting in Mission Impossible somehow. But probably on a Monday. I think probably on a Monday I'll end up going to see it. But nothing. No. So only Clown in the Cornfield was the only thing. Anything new for me.
Gotcha. Just to help promote it for our friends, the Dr. DC podcast just published there as of today or yesterday as we record this. Just dropped their episode 500. It is, you know, spoilers, but it's as you guys hear this episode there, the news will probably reach you if you're familiar with Dr. DC at all, but is the final episode of that show. And they put out a great episode and, ended the series nicely. I even got to be involved in a funny way, and that was fun. And I thank them for letting me be involved in that. It's not about my involvement. I think that show was a lot of fun. The fact that they got so many episodes in, they were very consistent about it, very diligent about it, very professional about it, while being straight up goofballs for quite a long time. They were very nice to myself and Mark, and so on and so forth. And I just want to, you know, they'll be moving on to future projects, but I just wanted to, you know, wish some fellow podcasters well and, job well done on a completed project.
Yes, absolutely. Chad, you killed another podcast. I'm not saying anything else, but
yeah,
I am Parallax.
your streak's alive, Chad.
Oh. For sure. But it was fun, and we wish them well. They did go through a bunch of stats on their final episode, and they mentioned that of their top 10 most listened to episodes, the episode with you and I on it, going over lantern lore and stuff like that, was number 10. Their 10th most listened to episode. I was not expecting that. That was really cool.
Yes, it is. Considering that was a while ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
For sure. All right. Well, if anybody wants to reach out to us and tell us what their favorite covers of the Geoff Johns era are, or if they want to push us to do more of these and what eras they would like to see us do, how do they do so?
Chad's cell number is lanterncast@gmail.com. Lanterncast.com is the website. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, like us on Facebook, hashtag Geocast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on whichever platforms. Please leave us a positive review. And last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Hey everybody, Dan here to give my top 10 Geoff Johns era covers. My number 10 is the cover of Green Lantern number 1, drawn by Carlos Pacheco. This is the zoomed in shot where the only things in frame are Hal's face, chest emblem, and ring hand. It's actually a really awkward image because of how much it cuts off, just so all of the Green Lantern iconography can be front and center, but Pacheco's art style is so clean that it doesn't feel crowded. My number 9 is the cover to Green Lantern number 65, drawn by Doug Monkey. This is Hal as a Yellow Lantern surrounded by the rest of the Sinestro Corps. It's a really nice looking crowd shot, the Sinestro Corps members look great, it's a version of Hal we don't get to see very often. Good stuff all around! It probably would have ranked higher on the list except some of the Yellow Lanterns got cut off by the title graphic. You really have to plan for things like that, it's one of the reasons why not just any piece of artwork makes a good cover. For number 8, I've got Green Lantern Rebirth number 1, drawn by Ethan Van Sciver. I love this for how creepy it is. Hal as the Spectre has never looked as haunting as he does in this image. Calmly looking at you with eyes in the shape of Green Lantern symbols feels eerie, and the reflection of Parallax in the lantern battery being held up is a nice ominous touch. The whole thing reminds me of the kinds of vibes that make me love horror so much. Number 7 is Green Lantern number 35, drawn by Evan Hayes. This is the uncomfortably close close-up of a Guardian's face, with Hal and Sinestro reflected in his eyes. I like the intensity of this image. It can be hard to make a single Guardian appear visually threatening, and this pulls it off perfectly. Number 6 is Green Lantern number 11 of the New 52 relaunch, drawn by Doug Monkey. Black Hand is crawling his way out of his own grave, with a Green Lantern symbol forming on the ground beneath his corrupted hand. This looks and feels like an image pulled straight out of Blackest Night. It's moody, it tells a story, it conveys how dangerous the villain is. Great stuff. Speaking of Blackest Night, number 5 is the cover to Blackest Night number 1, drawn by Evan Hayes. This is a close-up of a bunch of Black Lantern rings flying out of the open mouth of a skull. It's one of the best examples I've ever seen of a comic cover that's simple and effective while also accurately portraying exactly what happens inside the issue. Very striking image. The Geoff Johns era was good for horror. Number 4 is Green Lantern number 56, drawn by Doug Monkey. Most of this cover is filled with Hector Hammond's giant face, with Hal Jordan struggling to pry his way out of Hector's gross mouth. This is the most surreal and unsettling Hector Hammond has ever looked, and all of the green inside his mouth contrasts really well against the primarily orange color scheme of Hector's face. Super eye-catching. For number 3, I have Green Lantern number 23, the Evan Hayes homage to Green Lantern number 49 by Daryl Banks. This is Hal Jordan wearing a big creepy smile on his face, along with 12 Sinestro Corps rings on his finger. I love the fact that all of the rings are different sizes, and that one of them has a reflection of Parallax in it. A wonderful homage to a wonderful original. Number two was hard because for the longest time, I thought this was going to be my number one. But for number two, I have to go with the variant cover for Green Lantern number 41, drawn by Eddie Barrows. This is Hal struggling as the power of the Green and Blue Lantern rings pull him in opposite directions, with John Stewart flying in on his green side and St. Walker on his blue side, with the photo-negative faces of the Guardians looming in the night sky behind them. Visually, it's just stunning. This is exactly the kind of artwork you would want to see painted on the side of a van. And for the longest time, it was my number one. Now that honor is actually going to go to an issue we've already talked about. Green Lantern number 56. Only instead of talking about Hector Hammond's gross mouth, we're focusing on the variant cover by Art Germ, aka Stanley Lau. This is St. Walker hugging the Orange Lantern battery, homaging the very famous Larfleeze cover, which was also previously homaged by a cover of Hal Jordan in the same position. But this one feels distinct from the other two. Art Germ's style looks so different from everything else we've already talked about, and it really helps this image stand on its own. There's a surreal quality to this whole image, from the look on St. Walker's face to the flame effects leaking out of the battery like something familiar is being burned away. I love the added touch of St. Walker's head tail coiling around the battery. This is also the only cover on my list where the character is permitted to partially cover the title graphic, which adds some depth to the whole image. So that's it for me. If you want to hear me ramble more, go to the Mosaic Comics YouTube channel. Bye!
Hi everybody, I'm Jim Ford, and this is my list of covers. I talked to Mark, and he said that everybody was picking 10 covers from a specific genre or era of Green Lantern comics. I couldn't do it. I couldn't narrow it down to 10. So here's my list of 10, plus maybe a couple of little extras, but mostly 10. Right off the bat, I would have put Green Lantern 12, but Mark already claimed that one. So I can scratch that one right off my list. And there might be some others that do overlap, but I know for a fact that Mark picked that one. So I'm going to do two honorable mentions because they didn't really deserve to be on the list, but they're still really cool looking and I wanted to give them credit. The first being Green Lantern number 47. As part of Blackest Night, it was the Ed Benes variant cover with Indigo One on the cover. And it's just like a lot of purples, and Indigo One doesn't really look that great, but like the energy going around and the colors and everything like that just make it look really cool. If Indigo One looked a little bit better, she looks really weird and alien in this one. So it's not really, it's definitely not a favorite, but I love the colors, so I wanted to mention that. And the other one was the Green Lantern annual, which is the Green Lantern symbol, but it's bleeding. I love the cover. I think it's a really cool idea, but I'll be damned if I could figure out who actually drew it. I'm guessing it's Ethan Van Sciver, but I'm not really sure. Could this just be somebody that designed it? So since I can't accurately credit it to somebody, it's not going on my list. Now, for my actual top 10 list, which is actually 11, I'm going to start off with Green Lantern 63. That's the prologue to the War of the Green Lanterns. And it's awesome because it's got Krona on the cover with the gauntlet. This is the Brett Booth variant. It's just really vibrant. You can feel the energy flowing off of the gauntlet. It's really bright greens. It's a great drawing. I just love this cover. I'm pretty sure I actually own that one too. I don't know that I own all of these covers, but most likely I do. Next up, I am going with Green Lantern 45, the Francis Manapul variant. And this is just a really pretty cover with Star Sapphire sitting on like the sapphire shards. It's nice colors, it's a nice pose, it's a good design. I just love it. Next up we have, okay, so I feel like this is going to be on somebody else's list, but it's the Green Lantern Rage of the Red Lanterns. It's Green Lantern 36 from Rage of the Red Lanterns, but not just anyone. This is the, let's see, now I gotta remember who drew this one. This is the Shane Davis cover, but it's the second print. Because even though it's Green Lantern, it's Hal Jordan's Green Lantern costume, it's in red over Atrocitus in red in the background. So like the whole thing is just red. It's a monochrome cover. It's just really cool. I mean, it's a great cover in general, but when it's all in red like that, that's when it really pops. Next up, this was like, okay, slam dunk. There's no way that this couldn't be on the list. Green Lantern number 9. This is definitely done by Ethan Van Sciver, and this is Batman as a Green Lantern. It's just such a cool cover. Like, this cover is so cool, they made action figures, like multiple action figures. DC Direct made action figures from this. McFarlane made an action figure based off this. It's a really cool design. Also, Batman sells, so it's not really a huge stretch that they'd make action figures based off this, but I love it. It's a cool cover. Next up, we have, and once again, Gary Frank. Gary Frank drew this one, Green Lantern 19. This was the next series. It's a picture of all of the power batteries, like, shattered from Wrath of the First Lantern. It's a really cool image. I know I was very excited to see this when they first started advertising it. Like, this was, like, the poster that they showed. It's great. I mean, like, they look like they should look broken. It's just... can't really put it any better than that. It's just really cool. Let's see. Next up, I have Green Lantern number 11. It's a cool Doug Monkey cover with Black Hand in front of his grave, and he's reaching towards the ground, and he's like, you know, drawing power out of the ground. Now, the cool thing about this cover is that the regular cover, he's touching the ground, and it's a Green Lantern symbol. But on the combo pack cover, he's reaching the ground, and it's the Black Lantern symbol. And that one just pops a little bit more because of the colors. The Green Lantern symbol one, great. It's brilliant also. But this one with just like that black and like kind of white energy rolling off of it, just a little bit cooler. This cover would be perfect if they didn't have the Dark Knight Rises ad at the top of the issue. That's a little weird thing that kind of detracts from it, but the cover itself, art, is beautiful. Next up, we have Green Lantern number 7. I chose the variant, it's like an incentive cover done by Ian Churchill. This one is, I guess, probably a little bit more rare than most of them, but it's still a cool cover, and Ian Churchill, I don't think, did a whole lot of Green Lantern covers. So, I mean, I thought that this one was really neat. You got Indigo One in like this like weird throne, and then you've got Hal Jordan and Sinestro captive with these gauntlets, I guess, sapping their energy or something like that. Just a really cool cover. So there's that. Then, kind of course, I would be really, you know, shocked if nobody else picked this. Blackest Night number 1. This is Yvonne Hayes, Ivan Reis. I prefer Ivan Reis, but I guess he prefers Yvonne Hayes. It's the skull with the Black Lantern rings flying out of the mouth of the skull. I mean, you know, like, this is kind of iconic. I would say that this is an iconic cover. This is Blackest Night. It's just great. Then we have Brightest Day number 14. This, so like the last few on my list are all David Finch. Brightest Day 14, it's Batman as a White Lantern. Now, the costume of White Lantern Batman is not particularly exciting, but the way that David Finch drew this Batman, I think, is very cool. You really see all like the shadows and everything like that. It's really cool. They also made action figures based off this, but of course it's Batman. Then we have Brightest Day number 7, where you've got Deadman in front of the White Lantern power battery. Again, a David Finch cover. Again, I suspect that maybe somebody else also picked this cover, but who knows? And the final cover, and I don't know, this is probably an obscure one, but Brightest Day number 2. It's just cool. I just really dig this one. It's Aquaman. I'm usually not a huge fan of Aquaman, but this particular one, it's Aquaman looking into the water, and in his reflection, he sees the Black Lantern version of Aquaman. I don't know. Just kind of neat. It's got the White Lantern symbol in the background with, you know, the rocks and everything like that. Just a cool cover. So that's my list. I know that I broke the rules, but I also don't care. Hope the rest of the show is awesome, and I can't wait to listen to it. Take care, guys.